Are you sitting comfortably? Then I'll begin.
The road ahead will be long. Our climb will be steep. We may not get there in 1 year or even in one term. But America, I have never been more hopeful than I am tonight that we will get there. I promise you, we as a people will get there.
Myself on my iron
how did you do that?
A week ago.
See that? But you said the iron was sitting on the floor. Why was your iron on the floor?
Well, because I iron on the floor.
Why don't you buy an ironing board like most people?
I do have an ironing board. It's just a low level. It's an ironing board that resides on the floor.
Okay.
It's just easier to manage. I can put it in my closet. Yeah. And, you know, I don't have to fold anything that's big.
Are you supposed to put it on a table or something?
No, I don't have a table.
Yeah.
I'm a bachelor. I live in a box.
Yeah. What about Sammy?
He lives in a box too.
Okay.
We all live in boxes. We're all bachelors living in boxes that are connected to each other.
Okay.
So anyway, so no, I was reaching over to grab a pair of clean socks while I was sitting on the floor, and I reached around and I managed to hit the iron.
Did you cool it quickly? The secret to not getting burned is when you actually touch something very, very hot, run over and find water, run over and find a sink and pour cold water over it immediately to cool it down.
Oh.
Because the damage continues, you know, the flesh stays hot for half a minute or something and it continues to burn.
Oh.
But if you run over and do something to cool it down, or even just touch it with your hand, press it against the wall, press it against any object,
to
instantly cool it down,
huh.
And you'll get a lot less damage. Because the damage will continue.
It's this horrible looking gash, like somebody stabbed me or something in my arm, and people are asking me about it.
I know. So. We could be proud of that. Just say you got this big fight and you fought off the knife guy or something.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah, I got in this big battle, this big, big thug related battle.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You could be proud of that. Yeah. Does it look like a knife wound? Kind of.
It kind of does. It's like I got, like, somebody that swiped my wrist. Yeah. That's cool.
Did you hear about Helen Keller, is that it?
No.
The phone rang, she tried to answer the iron. Or something. Anyway.
Wow.
Something like that. That may not be exactly right. But,
okay.
Oh, I should.
So where are we?
Wait. GSM noise.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And checking in.
Yeah, this is bad GSM noise, but this thing will definitely be a problem.
Yeah, let me get this away from it and turn off the going to flight mode. Is there a Wi-Fi? Is there a Wi-Fi? So it was okay. Went into flight mode just so we won't get it.
There is Wi-Fi, as the French would say, but it's an open connection, but I can't get can't get on. So
So I did not check in the bright kite before I turned the cellular off.
Okay.
Well, nobody knows where I am.
That's not good.
I know. No, I checked in front of your office while I was waiting for you. I did check in there.
Okay. So anyway, where are we eating tonight?
The expensive Japanese place. I never remember the name of it.
That's right, because they don't really advertise it very well.
Yeah. They have it in Japanese outside. Just go to slurpcast.com, because everything we do is talked about on the slurpcast.com website.
That's right.
This is a slurpcast, which means a podcast made while eating and slurping your food in the microphone and stuff.
That's
especially
right.
Especially soup.
Soup.
Yeah. So whatever we talk about, go to slurpcast.com. We'll have the URLs and any notes and corrections and more details, stuff like that.
Right. So. And I'll have my vintage vintage history quotes on there, where I basically talk a little bit about the computer history.
Right. I've got one, too. Yeah, so I've got a historical event, too.
Oh, you do?
Does that show up? Did you saw me? Yeah, the compact disc.
That's awesome.
Turns 30 years old this week or something.
Can you believe that? It's been 30 years.
But is that on your list that is today? Because I'm not sure exactly what day
it
is.
I don't have this.
Yeah. Okay. 3.5 billion audio CD players have been sold.
Okay.
240 billion discs.
Wow.
Spelled D-I-S-C, remember?
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wait, isn't that because disc K stands for the computer?
I don't know.
Actual computer version of a disc.
I don't know.
Floppy disc was D-I-S-K, I think.
Yeah, so I think it just wanted to be different. Or maybe D-I-S-K stands for something stupid. I don't remember.
Digital Inspection Society Killers?
No, that'd be K.
Anyway. Cats.
Cats. Yeah. Okay. Digital Inspection Society cats. Okay. Yeah. That's. Yeah. Okay. Anyway. So. And then when did CDs first become a backup again? The other thing, the pre-burned one, like music CDs,
right,
were more expensive than records, but not really horrible. But okay, when CD burners first came out, the burners for a computer or something were very expensive, like over hundreds of dollars, and each blank was a dollar or two, weren't they? And,
well, they were more than a dollar.
For the blanks?
For the blanks. I don't remember, but I do remember that the one burner that I remember playing with was it required the use of an extra hard drive that was dedicated to the burning
process. They wanted that. I know that you'd have a lot of trouble if you didn't do that.
And so you would upload your image or your files, arrange them the way you wanted to, and then get this particular machine to burn. And I remember having to disconnect the SCSI cable.
Oh, right. Because the first ones were SCSI, right?
Well, it was an all-in-one, like, was it SCSI? It was, I guess the hard drive was SCSI.
I think the first ones I've had were SCSI, I think.
The first one was, the drive was SCSI to the burner.
Right.
But then you had to connect to the burner, like your laptop, via SCSI, upload the files to it, because this is, remember,
well, I don't remember that.
This is before USB.
Okay. No, I don't remember that. I just remember internal, buying a DVD writer that would go internally in a computer looking like a regular DVD drive of that size.
Oh, no. This was before then.
But they had no buffers back then.
Okay.
So your whole machine had to be fast enough for the hard drive to be able to feed data to the CD recorder in real time. And never get behind, never stutter, never get behind.
Okay.
So about a third of the things you burned would go bad. Okay. You'd have to throw the blank away and start over again, add a blanks that cost a dollar or two each or whatever, you know.
Okay.
Yeah. And I kind of remember I finally broke down and bought one because I was in a central computer. I think not the one in San Francisco, the one in like Mountain View or something, but probably during the Russian.
Okay.
And they had them on sale, and it was only like $300. It was such an incredible bargain that I just remember buying one, taking it home. Then later on they started having their own buffers that they got reliable, and software really worked reliably. Nowadays, the blanks cost a nickel, and they just work perfectly and stuff.
Well, you can still buy bad media. That still exists.
But it'll go bad in a year. I haven't bought any that go bad that won't even burn.
Oh,
I haven't had anything that bad
lately. Okay, so their QA procedures have gotten so good.
I think, but then they just wear out. Because originally you were talking about how they've done a lot of tests on this media and aging acceleration tests, that somehow they knew it would last for 100 years, and I was always very skeptical about that, because how'd they possibly know?
Okay.
And then they started going bad a year later, and people started having problems with stuff. You know?
So they haven't even given us menus yet. They are practically ignoring us.
Well, because we're in the no podcasting zone, I think. But you see the picture of the tape recorder with a circle and a slash or something.
Exactly. Speakers with a slash through it. It does say please wait to be seated, which we did not.
Oh, we just sat down. That's true. We're being punished, maybe?
Maybe we are being punished.
Yeah.
Shall I wave my hands? And
sure.
Yeah, because I bet they think that we're just here.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool. You just come into the restaurant.
So have you already played your noises? Because Wes always puts in a little piece of movie or something funny or something.
Yeah, I do. I always
Then he gets it in later.
Yeah.
So has that already happened? Or are we supposed to pretend that it already happened?
Yeah, it's already happened,
Are we supposed to talk about what's about to happen?
Oh, no, we already have. It's already happened.
It already happened.
Yeah, it did.
I didn't hear it. I didn't hear it. When?
I didn't hear it. Well, that's because it's called post-editing. We do the post-editing portion of it where...
Okay.
And I actually spend a ton of time researching sounds to play.
Okay.
Much more than I think probably I should. It should be much easier.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. Okay. So we can order
sushi menu.
The sushi
menu.
No, the famous thing here is the bento box, right? Where you order
I always get that anyway.
So you order any three combinations of really good quality food.
Right.
There's only six items. There's vegetable tempura, shrimp and vegetable tempura, New York steak, salmon steak, chicken teriyaki, and sashimi.
Yeah, so I always get chicken teriyaki and shrimp and vegetable tempura.
Okay.
And then this one, because I get the third one for free, of these expensive items, I guess.
Yes.
Anyway.
So do I have to admit why we haven't posted many shows recently?
Yes, why is
that? It's all my fault. I raised my hand. It is my fault. It's Wes's fault.
Okay.
I've actually been pretty swamped with work and staying late. And when I get home, I'm just dead tired, and I just...
You can't edit in your sleep?
No. No, I can't. And there's been this trend, if you don't know this, that I haven't been actually editing the notes. It's all, I've been leaving it up to Mark all to
do. Yes, I know. So all you have to do is play the audio. What's the big deal?
Instead of that. Well, no, it's the note-taking that does a lot of, you know, the note-taking takes a lot of time, and you've had to do it.
By the way, I like Audacity. I did an audio thing for Chris Burnet.
Okay.
And I used to use SoundForge all the time, but I just haven't bought one for so many years that I don't even have one that would work under Vista and stuff.
Okay.
So I tried the free Audacity one.
Yeah.
Audacity? Isn't it Audacity? What's Audacity then?
That might be a different one.
You may be right. It's Audacity. Maybe you're right. Anyway, whatever the free one is,
yeah,
it's actually quite good. The names of things were very different than I was used to on SoundForge, so it took me a while to figure it out.
Did it have the big buttons at the top?
No.
Remember the big ones?
No, it just has a million tools for different types of effects you can apply and stuff.
Okay.
But the names of those effects were quite different than what SoundForge called them.
Yeah, that's not Audacity. That's something else. Was it the alligator application that I spoke about in one of our shows?
I don't know.
Okay.
But, you know.
All right. Because there's one that I use that actually works with VST.
But this is what
effects.
Okay.
So if you have plugins.
Whatever I use, Audacity or Audacity, whatever it is, look at slurpcast.com.
Okay.
It is free and it does have a million features and it works quite well. So it has Windows and Mac both, maybe Linux also.
That's Audacity.
Okay.
Yeah, it has good features and you can do multi-tracks. You can play back multiple tracks at the same time. It's not obvious how to do that, but.
Right.
No, that's good.
Yeah, some things weren't obvious at all, but it did certainly work.
I have a side project going where I have my HP 2133 running Ubuntu.
Okay.
And one of my goals is to be able to do this show completely on that box, on that machine in Ubuntu with using open source software.
Why can't you?
I'm sure you can, and I'm sure there are tools right now that are that are worthy enough to be able to do that. I just don't know what those are.
Okay. So. Okay. Our soup and salad are here. Thank you.
Yay, we like soup and salad.
Yeah. Because you get the slurp. Soup's the most slurpable dish. Good. Thank you.
That's good.
That's why it's the expensive place.
Yes, that's right. That's why we're paying $20 a plate.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, so along with the CD, I guess just a funny item. I'm going to end up with too many iPhone things here, but this is an iPhone thing. But there's a video of a band that does all their instruments using iPhones and iTouches.
Okay.
Like they have ocarina. One of the girls plays ocarina. One of them does one of the drum kits.
Okay.
And one of them does one of the synthesizer, the keyboard synthesizer, and I forget what the fourth one does.
Okay.
But they're just using all these, you know, pretty decent instruments.
So the key question is, they're plugging
them into an amplifier and just playing together as they sing, and they sing.
The key question is, right before a performance, does everybody hard reset their iPods?
I would hope. I don't know. I would. I guess
I would too. I bet they do. Because you never know, that memory issue is still there.
I know.
You don't want to be playing along and suddenly have the iPod shut down.
That would certainly happen with mine. The jailbreak, I swear, is worse for that, but I'm not positive. So there's a very, very interesting thing going on with jailbreaks for iPod touches.
Okay. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Because the jailbreak for iPhones has been out and quite stable for a long time. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit of a pain because every time Apple comes up with a new firmware, if you want to install that, it unjailbreaks you. Then you have to jailbreak again and kind of configure things again.
Okay.
But in general, I'm just saying jailbreaks for iPhones have been out forever for all their different versions. But the newer version of the iPod Touch, they couldn't break. And then finally in the last couple of weeks, people came up with a jailbreak that was very, very close, but not perfect. Because in order to boot it, at boot time, you still had to plug in a USB device that could send one command over the USB channel to the iPod Touch. Mm-hmm. That's because the Touch was newer than the iPhone, and Apple had changed the ROM a little bit, but they had a little bit more security in the in the boot ROM.
Alright.
So it wasn't really, in practice, it maybe isn't that bad because you just can't boot your Touch out in the field unless you have a cable with you and some other device you can boot it. You can assist you in doing that one command to boot it from.
That's bad.
Yeah,
that's not good.
But at least you know you can kind of do it.
Okay.
So they were unhappy and they kept talking about how we're trying to get around this barrier, but we can't, unfortunately. But here's ways you can build the cable. Here's ways you can boot it off another iPhone. Here's ways you can boot it off a notebook and stuff like that. All of a sudden, someone else released a jailbreak for the iTouch that didn't need that.
Okay.
And the original developers admitted that they've known about it for a couple of months, that they actually don't need that USB cable and they don't need that thing to boot it. They've actually known how to crack it completely for a couple of months.
But
they were keeping it completely secret because they expect Apple to come up with a whole new version of the iPhone this summer.
Okay.
And they didn't want to reveal the secret because they wanted Apple to make the same mistake and leave the same flaw in the new one. That's something Apple could very easily fix.
Mm-hmm.
But then when the leaked out, when someone else leaked their work and started selling it, they got pissed off, so they had to give it away for free and disclose the whole thing. Which is very funny, because this last month we were talking about all the, what a pain it is to do this tethering and booting.
And they were lying.
And it turns out they're lying the whole time, just not to let Apple
know about it. Does not bode well for the group, yeah.
No, it's fine, but they had a good motive, I guess. Because at this point, now that it's known at this point, Apple may well have a chance to fix it, and the next version of iPhone may not be good, may not be breakable at all. This is the best they could do with this one. Yeah. So,
where there's a will, there's a way.
I know, but it's just kind of funny.
Yeah.
Well, what they have not done, or maybe they're lying again, is they're still not able to break the latest modem firmware.
Okay.
So if someone buys an iPhone today or upgrades to the latest modem firmware, they swear they don't know how to break that.
Okay.
And they're just waiting for later firmware updates that might make it breakable again.
Huh.
Okay. But maybe they're lying about that, I suppose. But yeah, so I'm still being very, very careful with the way I update my firmware, not to touch the modem firmware and stuff.
Let me go ahead and jog your memory. Let's go do some Computer History Daily Quotes.
Okay.
This is interesting. So this is a term that we still use to this day, but we're often not, like, it's not as popular as it was, like, in the early 90s, maybe 80s, when this sort of thing was a coin phrase. Electronic print technologist Jonathan Siebold originates the WYSIWYG phrase in the 1980s. The phrase is an acronym for "what you see is what you get," and is used in computing to describe the seamlessness between the appearance of edited content and the final product. Siebold reportedly first uses the phrase after watching a Flip Wilson TV show comedy sketch.
Mm. And they used to have Siebold conferences. Maybe they still do.
Okay.
The desktop publishing industry used to have a conference once a year called Siebold or something.
Right.
And new people would go
to
that.
Was he like the founder of that? Or?
I guess. I never really knew where the name came from, to tell you the truth. But
coins the term WYSIWYG and then goes on to make millions of dollars.
Yeah. You know, I tend to be where, you know, I, for my age, certainly, I keep up with modern day technology. I know all about it and I buy all the latest stuff and all that, right?
Okay.
But at some point, when something really new comes out, I tend to be against it.
Uh-huh.
And it takes me a while to get convinced that it's really worthwhile.
Okay.
And then I jump into it and I become very modern again and stuff.
And I think I remember you.
Yeah,
back
so,
in the day,
so I didn't like WYSIWYG.
I
did not like
that,
WYSIWYG. Yeah.
I remember you not.
It was just a waste of time. It just slowed you down.
Well, you were, you know, I think you were actually, you were actually talking about how WYSIWYG was bullshit because it actually wasn't truly WYSIWYG. And you were like finding examples of applications that you could break because they really weren't that WYSIWYG.
No.
They were sort of WYSIWYG.
I don't know, maybe.
You remember, like the HTML editors of the early days,
where
they tried to draw some sort of representation of what you were doing, and they didn't do a very good job of it.
No, but I had a problem with WYSIWYG long before then, just word processors. I didn't like WYSIWYG word processors that much.
Like HTML editor, you wanted like something that actually you put the tags in.
Yeah, because it was faster. Because maybe nowadays the machines are so fast nowadays, maybe I wouldn't have had these ideas.
Okay,
but back then WYSIWYG type word processor just kind of slowed you down. You got less information on the screen and stuff. And,
and it was slow. I remember it was slow for
yeah, if you just memorized a bunch of tags,
yeah,
you could just type the tags in and keep on typing, type, sticking tags, type.
Okay.
You didn't have to sit there with a mouse for an hour adjusting everything and making it look good and stuff. And I still, in a sense, feel that way because I still use style sheets a lot in Microsoft Word. I mean, most people don't really seem to do it. But I'll make special styles for a lot of different things.
Okay.
Because it makes it consistent. You know, if I want to quote something, that I have a style called the QO for quote.
Okay.
that will just make the quote look exactly like I want it. But yeah, so it's WYSIWYG because I can see on the screen what I'm doing, but I don't adjust the, I don't sit there with a mouse and make the indents and all that stuff.
Okay.
I just apply a style to that section I want to be a quote.
Okay.
And then I say, I grant you, I'll look at the screen and confirm that it looks good, but, huh, but I'll still do that. That's kind of, so I kind of like the tags because it was a lot faster to type and also it just kept everything very consistent. Hmm. Whereas the WYSIWYG editors back then did not have the style sheets. So to keep consistency amongst different things, you have to sit there,
okay,
you know, adjusting every paragraph by hand and every page by hand and stuff.
Okay.
I think.
Huh.
So anyway, that was kind of why.
Cool. And, well, yeah, my experience with WYSIWYG was that early on it really wasn't truly WYSIWYG. You would use it, like, specifically with web editing,
yeah, that's
and even
true.
Word
yeah.
processors. Right. When you did things with the page placement mm-hmm. of paragraphs right. and things like that, and then you went to print, in the case of creating a document that's supposed to match what your printer is going to output, in your case of doing Word documents,
right.
The early WYSIWYG editors would try, but sometimes very failed.
Well, then it's really not worth it if yeah. it's not even WYSIWYG, yeah.
Yeah. And I think it was specific to the printers that you were using or the drivers.
Right.
That
right.
Word was trying to guess what the driver, through the driver, what it would look like.
Right. Okay. Anyway, that stuff all works for, I think for yes. web design, maybe there's still differences, but certainly for word processing, yeah. that all works nowadays.
Well, yeah, well, like for what the CSS or CSS, mm-hmm. not CSS, mm-hmm. what's the yeah. package, what's the name, CS3 or the whole package from Dreamweaver, for Dreamweaver?
Oh, yeah.
That, like, Adobe puts out now?
Yeah, I forget.
It's like the whole, that what do you pay, like, $1,300 or more than $3,000 for the whole package?
I still kind of feel, though, that for web design, the original thing for web design was deliberately not WYSIWYG, because you want the user to be able to adjust things, you want the page to automatically conform itself
to
what fonts and what
there were two classes,
page sizes are available and stuff.
There were two classes of yeah. WYSIWYG people, of HTML web developers. There was the mom and pop who didn't really care about the HTML code. They just wanted right. to use something that was like a word processor to develop
right.
a web page.
Right.
So they were very simple and their needs were very simple and they would just simply do that and all right. the HTML would be created underneath.
Right.
But then there were people who actually wanted to touch the code and actually mm-hmm. do advanced things that you could only do in an editor
right.
that supported tags.
Okay.
And those were simply like, you know, like you're saying, text editing tools
yeah.
where you do your HTML and then you like say, okay, I want to browse this in a web browser and it would sure. actually like draw and render yeah. that page you were.
No, but what I'm saying though is that for web browsing, I still feel in a lot of cases you don't want WYSIWYG. Because right. you don't want the user to see exactly what you're saying. The user might have a different resolution monitor. The user might have right, different fonts installed, something like that. So the whole theory of HTML in the first place was you give tags that are hints for how it should look at the other end.
Uh-huh.
But the other end would adjust those tags and obey them in different ways depending on what the capabilities were
yeah.
of their machine.
Was it ways of formatting?
And I still kind of feel that way in some case, some ways. But you know.
The idea of separating the content from the formatting
right.
was something that was like what XML's goal.
Yeah, yeah, because
versus HTML, which is a combination yeah. of both.
Yeah, so. but specifically, my main issue was width of columns and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That people would design web pages for some medium monitor, just assume that you had
an 800 by 600. Right, right.
Whereas if you actually had 1,000 by 10,000 or something,
yeah.
it would just kind of sit there stupidly in the corner. And if you had something less resolution than that,
right.
you have to sit there scrolling horizontally all the time.
Yeah, well, look at like PDAs and yeah. iPhones. And,
mm-hmm. Right.
You know, even though the iPhone renders a full HTML page in a very small screen,
right.
things like, you know, the iPacks. The iPack that I
know,
had
they
horrible, yeah. i.e. on that thing was horrible. You know, you wanted to find a site that was designed yeah. specifically for that screen resolution.
You still do, even for the iPhone, you still kind of do,
yeah.
if you can, but anyway.
And most people put like PHP logic in their code to say, yeah. oh, this is not for, or like JavaScript yeah. code to say, well, mm-hmm. this the header that's coming in here is
right.
actually some browser on a very strange
yeah.
machine, so
right.
let's route them to the WAP version of our website.
Yeah, whatever, and that may or may not be appropriate.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
But I say, but my thing, but I say more with that, if I wanted to have my browser window wider, I wanted the columns of text to get wider to match it.
Right.
Whereas a lot of the web pages would just have this exact size.
Well, some of that
and
is,
I couldn't make them bigger and I couldn't make them wider. And
some of that is the author. Some of that is the author's lack of knowledge on how to do that, right? Because you can do certain things like that.
Yeah, I know you can do that now with all the modern day stuff.
Yeah, but you do still want to stick with the lowest common denominator in terms of the code that you're writing.
But if you just use basic HTML, it'll automatically reflow the columns based on the width that you set the browser window.
Right.
And I say, that's what I say, I prefer that to something that's strictly WYSIWYG based on what the author wanted to do.
So you do want that because it'll reformat correctly on a smaller screen.
Yeah, I do want that, absolutely, yeah. So that's why I still kind of like the tag concept for that kind of thing.
Well, there's something to be said for links. Right. We've talked about that at some point, you know, the text browsers.
Too low down, though. I do kind of like pictures. Well,
you can still browse. I think you can still look at pictures in links.
In link, can you? Don't you have to open them separately or something?
No. I think there's probably a version of links that would let you do that. You can turn it on or off. And I think what the Opera browser has special, like, ways of formatting HTML.
Yeah, it does. I haven't used Opera for a long time, but it definitely did have ways of simplifying it and getting it down to just one column if you had a narrow column and stuff.
Steam
Dice? Here? Yeah.
So do you want me to do another one, or?
Do you have one? Well, I'm eating.
Okay. So let's go to the next. South African native Seymour Papert pioneers the development of the Logo programming language in 1968.
Okay.
I was born in 1970. Wow. His team designs Logo as a computer language for children. Logo provides immediate feedback, aiding in the learning process. When a command is unusable or unable to be executed, Logo explains the problem instantly, allowing the user to learn from the mistake and debug intelligently.
Okay.
There's really an interesting history behind this on how what machines it first came about on, and eventually its highest point in the Apple II machine, where many students, including schools, adopted it as a way of teaching kids how to program.
That's 1968, you said?
That's when it was started, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So what was out then? Apple?
No, Apple II was not
out. They're not out yet, no. When did Commodore come out? Like 78 or something?
They all come out. No, that was Commodore. Oh, the PET. Yeah,
something like that. I forget.
I used Logo a little bit in grade school. I really didn't like it that much for doing. I was more of a basic person.
Okay. Yeah, Logo is based on turtles.
It is.
Kind of.
It's based on a turtle, but you can have more than one turtle.
Okay.
Yeah.
It really doesn't look anything like a turtle. No.
What doesn't look like a turtle? The carrot? No, it doesn't.
No.
You're right.
The cursor logo, I don't think, looks like a turtle.
It's a triangle.
What about the fourth language? That was just as F-O-R-T-H, so just as interactive as Logo, but very fast.
I don't know anything about fourth.
So it was pretty popular for a while, especially for device control things. It was a universal language you could use for anything, but it was kind of weird. And people tend to use it more for, controlling motors and controlling devices and stuff.
Huh. Okay, so the next one. Intel brings the personal computer to a new level with the release of its Pentium processor in 1993.
Okay.
The Pentium processor runs at an astounding 60 megahertz, has 3.3 million transistors, and performs 100 million instructions per second.
That's impossible.
Intel prices the chip at $878 and makes...
Sure, it wasn't $878,000?
No.
Do you realize how fast that was? How many millions of things going on,
It makes the strategic decision to maintain backward compatibility with previous x86 designs.
Right.
The Pentium and its successor, the Pentium Pro, becomes synonymous with the PC.
Okay.
So.
What year was it?
1993.
And when did AMD and other people come out with clones of that? That were just as good?
Around the same time.
Yeah, probably.
I think. And there were bugs in the initial release of the Pentium with the math.
Yeah, was that the one that had the floating point bug? Yeah.
I think I remember that.
Yes, I remember there were things on the web. There's programs you could download to prove to you that yours has the floating point bug or doesn't have it.
Right.
And it came out with software like Windows and, Mac didn't use those processors back then.
No.
But Windows came out with a fix that would fix it in software. it would inspect what your problem was that you're about to compute with the chip, and if it saw the problem was one of the ones that might come to the wrong answer,
yeah,
it would fix it.
Is that a firmware fix or is it software?
No, real software. Well, Windows really? Had it in real software for a while. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Which would slow it down a lot because you have to keep looking at the problems to see if
it's like a terminate save resident program.
Yeah.
It's a DOS.
Right.
DOS thing. All right, next one. Okay. Scratch that. I've got one more.
Then we can go on to the fart apps?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
The largest reported computer error occurs at First National Bank of Chicago in the spring of 1996. More than 800 bank account holders receive checking balances that increase by hundreds of millions of dollars.
Okay. Sounds good.
First National Bank error is attributed to a quote-unquote computer glitch.
Well, hardware or software? Because mainframes did at one time have glitches from time to time.
Okay.
I worked on an AMDAL mainframe that actually did have a hardware bug that the machine did not catch within itself.
Really?
And it would sometimes make mistakes, yeah.
Huh. A hardware glitch, huh?
Yeah.
Well, this was probably software.
Yeah, probably, yes.
Or user error.
Yeah. Right.
I know.
Or hacker. Hacker wanted millions of dollars for himself and hid that by having everyone else go up by millions of dollars also.
Okay. Wow.
I have no idea.
Okay, so I'm done with my daily history quotes.
Yeah, so I have lots of items, but I just have to turn pages while I'm eating and stuff.
Should we move on to the
fart apps?
The applications?
Well, no, fart apps are really separate. Because I specialize in fart apps. You know, the applications are supposed to be things that we would actually want on our phone and stuff. Whereas the fart apps, I just talked about the news of the day, what happened this week, and the fart app space and stuff.
People would not be interested in fart apps, are you?
Well, of course they would. I would hope.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Right.
So just, I say every week I'm just astounded that there's more and more new and intriguing things in the fart app space. You know?
In the fart app space?
Yes.
Like, that's something important.
It is.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to invest in the fart app space.
I could talk about more jailbreak, but let me do a fart app first. Then we'll talk about jailbreak. Right. There's some new jailbreak stuff, but
you just want to move right on to the good stuff.
Yeah. See, I'm ignoring TinEye for now. I'm ignoring. Here we go.
Oh God.
Okay, I'm going to talk about a website that's actually very good. If you've never heard of it, you should definitely go there. It's called Will It Blend.
Oh,
is it actually willitblend.com?
It is.
So if you're not familiar with Will It Blend, go there, and this guy who's selling one particular brand of blenders does it by throwing various things, including an iPhone, into the blender, turn it on the switch, and shows what happens. So Will It Blend? It turns out the iPhone, yes, other than some metal parts kind of stay behind. So there's a part out this week that part of what it does, it has a bunch of switches for what kind of foods you're going to be eating. Are you going to be eating refried beans, spinach dip, yes or no, and a whole bunch of other ones, yes or no. So you set up all the switches.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Oh,
thank you. Great, thanks. So you set up all the switches, and then you say, will it fart? And then you get a fart noise, or you don't get a fart noise based on whether this combination of food will fart or not.
So okay.
Or something like that. I haven't tried it, but something like that seems to be what it does.
Are you sure that's all it's going to do?
Well, it does something else, but I won't mention that.
Okay.
Yeah. So what's the name of it? I can't, you know what, it gives it away if I say what the name of the application is.
But
anyway.
Okay. So you have to somehow, like...
Right. Well, we'll put it on Storycast, but, you know. And then there's another one called Farty Face, where...
This one's good.
You take any picture in your photo album or take a new picture or whatever, and then you start touching on the picture.
Yeah.
And whenever you touch, it makes the fart noise as though you're farting into the person's face, and it leaves a brown residue behind on your screen.
That's great.
Which you could shake the phone to clean your screen later of these brown residues.
Wonderful.
You know. So, now, how did that get in the App Store? That was kind of weird that Apple would let that one in the App Store. Anyway, it's just funny.
Interestingly enough, they're loosening their grip.
Yeah. And then, though...
when are they going to have the porn iTunes store? Like,
oh yeah, they should.
They have a special login.
Oh, they're starting to actually. It's one of the jailbreak things that they're starting to. You know, the Cydia guy is starting to turn into an app store where he's accepting paid apps where he gets 30%, the developer gets 70%, and he handles the money transactions just like the Apple's application store
does. That's for jailbreak.
Yeah.
Okay.
And an article where I read about that said that someone else is coming out with one for porn apps, because he doesn't typically have porn apps in his. So someone else is coming out with one that will.
Whew, good. I'm glad that porn is finally coming to the
app. I know, absolutely.
Even though it's jailbroken.
Absolutely, yeah. And then, this may or may not have anything to do with the with an iPhone and porn apps, but remember you once had this preacher you thought you and your father thought was hilarious, that you'd listen to these tapes of this preacher that would have fart noises in it was farts, right? With fart noises?
He was Pastor Gas.
Right.
Yeah, that's
but it was definitely fart noises that were all the way through.
Oh,
the
yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
So, someone in the audience of some city council meeting had a fart machine with them, which may have been an iPhone, may have been something else. Mm-hmm. And as the city council people were trying to be very serious and discuss bills and stuff, this person would keep making their fart machine go off, and the city council, they're not quite sure who it is, so they just kind of try to ignore it, but they can't ignore it, and they also all burst out laughing. So, so we'll have a link to the video where you can see that.
That's good. That would be good.
So I guess that's all for the fart space. Okay. And
We actually need to, we need to link to the Reverend, because...
Yeah, okay. Yeah, remind
because
me about
he,
that.
This guy was awesome. He was a real preacher. The whole story went about, he was a TV evangelist, basically.
Mm-hmm.
The guy would talk about, you know, he'd talk about stories of other people, but the thing that made him funny is that he once in a while would pause, and he'd give all these, like, these really interesting facial expressions while he's feeling God.
Okay.
So, you know, oh, wow, I felt that go right through me. And, you know, but his facial expressions were so funny that somebody decided to take the sections out of the different TV broadcasts and compile this, like, this hilarious video of him, you know, and adding sounds, adding gas sounds to it.
Okay.
Just perfect. It's wonderful.
Well, your iPhone and fart app could do that, you know, like...
In real life,
mm-hmm.
Why do you need an iPhone to do that in real life? I mean,
well, that's why.
Okay, so bring another one. Hit me with another one.
Okay, something serious. Google, there used to be this system called Grand Central that would, for a while, was giving away free answering service and free call forwarding and very intelligent call forwarding methods and stuff like that. And it's one of those .com things that didn't really make any sense because they were spending a lot of money for these services but giving away for free with the hope they'd be able to charge for it someday. Well, Google bought it, and whoever already had a number, whoever already had a free Grand Central account, like me and a couple of my friends, got to keep them when Google bought it, but otherwise it just seemed to die. Google just didn't seem to enhance it. Years have gone by and nothing's ever changed in it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, all of a sudden, Google has decided they really are going to open it to the public, and in several weeks they're going to start giving away free Grand Central numbers again with a whole bunch of extra enhancements and stuff. So what Grand Central can do today, for example, is you give out your Grand Central phone number instead of your regular phone number.
Right.
And then you can set Grand Central by schedule or just log in and change it right now or whatever to where you are. But you can have it ring your cell phone and office phone and home phone simultaneously, whichever one you answer on first wins.
Okay.
Or you could give it a schedule, you know, these hours ring my cell phone over, these hours ring my home phone over or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You can have it so that it's the person, it'll ring you, they won't know it. They'll just hear ringing continuously, or maybe they'll get a recording saying the system's trying to find you just to entertain them. It was ringing too often. But instead of finding you directly, a voice will come on from Grand Central saying that you have a call from so-and-so caller ID. Would you like to accept it? Would you like to transfer it to you right now? Would you like to reject it and have it give a voicemail? Or would you like to give the voicemail but let you listen in on the voicemail as it's being left?
Wow.
As though you had an old-fashioned answering machine.
All right.
So Grand Central, for the years, for people who are grandfathered into it, has done that.
Okay.
But now, let's say Google's about to release it again with some additional features, including voicemail transcriptions, which I always like.
Nice.
But Google swears that they're going to do it purely by software, so you'll get the transcriptions very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But my experience, it'll probably be horrible because the operator ones are so much better, but take 10 minutes to come through or whatever, and charge like $10 a month. This one's going to be free. And then the Grand Central will let you make outgoing calls where you'll have to pay for them, but cheaper than Skype.
Wow, okay.
Like the overseas calls for lower rates of Skype, things like that. I forget all the new features, but basically within several weeks, people will be able to get this for themselves again, I think for free, unless you call these long-distance calls.
Do they own TellMe?
No. No, TellMe was bought by Microsoft.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah. I don't know what Microsoft has done with it, if anything. I'm not sure.
Okay.
So, making money.
Yeah, I guess. So TellMe had real services in production. Like TellMe ran and probably still does. If you call 800 information, like 800-555-1212, mm-hmm. you get a TellMe system that AT&T pays money to TellMe to run that.
Okay.
And I'm sure that's still running with Microsoft getting the profit from that.
Okay.
But I just don't know whether Microsoft has anything new with it.
No, I don't know.
Yeah. But now that Google's doing this one, like maybe they'll have to, I don't know, just to try to compete.
Yeah. Well, you have to explain what TellMe is for people who are in the know.
TellMe.
TellMe.
Yeah. It's a 1-800. What's the phone number?
It's really a voice attendant.
But it has a phone number you can call. So it started out strictly as a demonstration project,
right.
where it would give information, like it would give weather and movies and restaurant listings and stuff like that.
Just call 1-800-555-1212, and it will answer, and you can speak to it.
Yeah, but that's for a specific purpose. But TellMe started as
that's just one
some phone number that has the word T-E-L-L at the end. They shouldn't really speculate. They should really put it in the Surfcast entry. What it did for a long time before they actually had any paying customers is it was a demonstration project that the public could call, and it would give you a directory assistant, it would give you movie listings and restaurant listings and stuff like
it's
that.
Google 911.
It's kind of like that, but it did a lot of other things.
Right.
And then because they had this very public demonstration project, they got other companies interested in them and ultimately sold AT&T on the idea of using them for the 800 information. I think other phone companies are using them now and stuff like that. But I think the original number is still around, and I can't remember what it is. So you can still call in and get information from it. But now it's evil because it's owned by Microsoft, so it's evil now. As opposed to
business. What is Microsoft evil now? Because when they released...
Well, Apple's wonderful and Google's wonderful, but Microsoft's...
It wasn't long ago, Mark, that you were saying that Apple was horrible and Microsoft was wonderful.
That was before the iPhone.
Wow. No. Well, wait till Windows 7 comes out. Then you're going to be like, oh, okay.
No, I'm already playing with Windows 7. It looks exactly like Vista, so it's not really that much different.
It's more
from
efficient,
Vista,
though.
I suppose, maybe.
Well...
Maybe. That's what they claim.
I don't mind
Vista. I'm a fast machine. Vista is fine.
I know. I've seen enough of 7 so that will be something that I will upgrade to when it comes out.
Oh, sure. Well, of course I would, too. But, but
everybody should.
But I don't really mind.
Whereas Vista, I stay away from.
I like Vista. Vista's fine. On a fast enough machine, Vista's fine.
But it's sold. The problem is on netbooks, some of these netbooks come with Vista when they really should not come with Vista because they're not powerful enough to take advantage of the Vista features.
Yeah.
It's just really slow. Not as slow as, I mean, you have to remove all the things that bog it down when you
get it.
That's
probably worse than the Vista. Yeah.
Yeah, uninstall all the applications that that your vendor or your company that you're buying it from installs.
Right. And then Microsoft is very bad in Windows Mobile. I mean, they hardly change it. There's actually a huge number of phones sold every year with Windows Mobile in them. And Microsoft really doesn't ever change it all that much. You know, they put some little cosmetic things, or more often the phone vendor is forced to change the operating system for Microsoft and add friendly things that Microsoft never gets around to doing and stuff. And,
Well, you kind of have to when you get it. Yeah. You kind of have to install managers, different types of shell-like applications that allow you to visually see what's running in the background. Even though the things are there, they don't use that in the operating system. It's not visually there and easy for you to access.
Right.
Like when you close an application, you're really not closing it.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So.
Anyway. Okay.
So we did that one.
Let's go to applications.
Okay.
We're running out of space.
iPhone applications?
Okay. Yeah. Well, you already did that.
Well, that's just the fart apps. They don't really count.
Okay.
But then I usually throw in at least one serious one.
Huh. I'm going to do a game, and I'm going to do something useful.
Mm-hmm.
I'll do three things. One, I want to bring up real quick. There's an application that seems to be doing very, very well. It's called Text Free. And what you do is basically you run Text Free, and you type in anybody's phone number,
mm-hmm.
and it figures out on their server how to send your SMS message to that particular cell phone. And who that provider is.
But I wonder if they're accurate, because they can tell by the prefix who the theoretical provider is, but because of number portability, the prefix may not reflect reality anymore. So I wonder if they can keep up with all those changes.
They're doing some weird things in the SMS text messaging, because every time you send a message, it ends up on the other person's phone with a different number.
Well, yeah.
So,
but you don't take your phone number,
So it's never like, it's never easy to find. Like for an iPhone, it's fine because it figures it out and keeps the bubbles going, and you can continue on with your SMS thread.
The new Grand Central is going to handle SMS. If someone sends an SMS to your Grand Central number, it'll accurately deliver that to whatever phone number you set to forward voice calls to.
Okay, that'll be cool. So I've had three different conversations going on at the same time within this application, and it just works. It's a little slow, but it does send the SMS messages.
And you don't have to pay for them.
They're free. Yeah. Okay. I'm using it on an iTouch second generation, so I'm only, of course, doing this over Wi-Fi.
Right.
But I'm having conversations, at night without using my phone with various different people,
and
they can in turn respond to me as well.
Okay.
But of course, because of the operating system, I have to have the application running if somebody wants to get a hold of me.
That's true. If you jailbreak, there are background things, ways to do that.
So this is a good little program. A couple of interesting options that it offers. I don't need to go into detail about that. But again, it's.
Are you hiding something? Why are you hiding these options?
Pinger Text Free. Just do a search for Text Free.
Okay.
You
want to
do one now?
I'm just looking through my list. Another item about the iPhone, but not about a specific application.
Okay.
Is Apple shortly? By the time this recording is posted, it'll already have happened. Apple is about to show off the iPhone firmware 3.0, but only show it off. They won't release it to the public at all. It was just going to have a demonstration of all the new features of it.
Okay.
I think on the 17th or something.
Will it be for the Touch or the iPhone?
Both.
Do you know anything about it? Or
They haven't announced that much. No, there's just speculation, but nobody really knows.
Okay, when is it going to be announced?
I think this is March 17th.
Okay.
So it'll already have happened by the time this gets posted. But still.
Well, no, it's the 12th.
Yeah.
So it takes me 2 weeks to publish?
Well, you have two, you're two behind.
Month.
And you're two behind, don't forget. And then,
I can just skip. It's okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Here's an interesting question. Out of all the applications that you have installed on your phone, which is the one that's updated the most frequently?
Oh, as far as actually new versions of it,
or bug fixes, things like that.
In the past, the stupid one, this Tilt Meter Pro.
Mm-hmm.
is one of them that certainly has the most updates.
Because I have that.
What have
as well.
I gotten? Like, what have I gotten lately?
I got one that's amazing.
There's something lately has gotten a bunch.
I have a utility that I think I've talked about before, but it, in terms of the updates, it's like that's all this guy ever does, and he's just probably really good or girl. Yeah. I don't know who.
Yeah, there's one that I've seen fairly often. I forget what it is.
Okay.
Lately.
Gym Buddy is the one I'm talking about. It just updates, man.
Oh, the movie one I like now playing.
Oh yes,
gets updated all the time.
Okay.
I actually can't run their updates right now because I haven't bothered to go to the latest firmware because of all the jailbreak nonsense I'd have to go through. And the latest firmware just doesn't seem to do anything new.
Okay.
But all of a sudden, several applications refuse to run on my phone because they're taking advantage of something new.
So do you like skiing games?
No.
Okay. Have you ever gone down the path of trying to find an application in the App Store that there's so many different apps that are supposed to do this this certain thing that...
What I do is I read the description.
And install all the different apps.
Not if they're chargeable. If they're free, maybe.
But some are charged, some are free. Yeah. But I've actually.
No, what I do in a case like that is I read the descriptions of all of them, see if I can tell for the ones better. Then I read all the user comments, because if the user's like one of the other ones better than this one, they'll say that in their comments.
Well, they will, yeah.
So you kind of get an idea for what people really like.
Okay. Yeah. That's how I do it.
But I'm not about to spend a dollar on more than one, you know.
Well, this one, the one that I did that, I just went on this path to nothing. Like, I went down this path to, like, just ended up at a dead end. Okay. Was the Craigslist.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Looking for applications that allow you to look at Craigslist stuff.
I don't think any of them are really that
stupid.
Good, are they?
This is, like, stupid thing. They're so afraid of Apple that they're not going to display the images and the personals
because
they're afraid that that's going to be pornographic. Okay. And they literally say that.
Right.
Come on. So the app that I use is called Craig's Mobile. I've talked a little bit about that before.
But that just happened, though. Apple, the new version of Tweety.
Yeah.
Apple refused to release the new version of Tweety because it has the function, you know, the Twitter trends kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. And when Apple was looking at it in their store and evaluating it, the Twitter trends showed some pornographic words.
Okay.
So that had nothing to do with Tweety whatsoever. That was simply happened to be the most popular thing on Twitter that day.
Okay.
And Apple denied the new release because this pornographic stuff was showing up. Apple then gave in. They gave in several days later and allowed it. But there was, but as an example, yeah. So if the
that's so stupid.
Yes, I know.
All right. Well, that was not the application I wanted to talk about. The useful application I'm going to talk about is something that someone recommended at my job to me a while back. I was using that first to-do list program that came out. I forget. It's from I forget the website of the company. They make predominantly Mac programs, and they were
Remember the milk?
I remember the. I know about that one, which requires a. In order to really use it, you got to actually like create an account and pay for their services on their website.
Okay.
But. This actually also has a Macintosh application that goes with it, but you can completely use it on the iPhone or iTouch without having to worry about having to create one of these accounts.
Okay.
It's called Things. And Things is a very, very simple task manager to-do list tool, which simply presents you with an inbox, a today folder, a next folder, scheduled folder, someday folder, projects folder, and logbook.
But how can you easily move today to tomorrow and do it every single day for the next 3 months?
Yes.
Okay, because that's very important.
Yeah, to just keep delaying.
You don't want to actually do anything.
Yeah. Right, yeah. I am not familiar with all of the features, but the basics are that basically from that main screen, you can actually say, I'm going to create something to remember. It brings up a new to-do screen, which allows you to type in a title. You can show details. You can create tags, notes, and you can specify a due date. Okay. You can also then, at this point, specify where you're going to create it, whether it goes into the inbox, the today, next, scheduled, someday, or any of the other boxes you might have created. You can actually create your own. So when you save it, it resides in the most appropriate box. When you go into that box or just go to your today screen, you're given a list of what's due today and what's coming up. All these are options that you can set. But the simplicity of this whole thing is that you don't have to type in a whole lot of information. You can just simply say, okay, I'm going to create a new to-do list, and this is the information that I need.
But will it synchronize with anything, any normal standard software, though?
No, it doesn't. It synchronizes with its sister or father application on the Macintosh. So
I always want something that can synchronize with Outlook, and there's some, but not very, very many.
Well, you can send these tasks in email. But as far as I can tell, you can only do it on an individual task basis. You can only forward the emails per
task. There's a good one that will synchronize with Outlook, but its whole philosophy is so different from Outlook that it's hard to follow what it really ends up doing with it on the iPhone.
So there's this thing called automatic logging, where you can log items daily.
Anyway, so the one I'm using, but not that much, because I say it's just kind of weird, but it will synchronize with Outlook, and but it'll synchronize the individual items. But the problem is the way Outlook would prioritize them, it has a totally different philosophy to how to prioritize them. Therefore, it's hard to get the same list showing up on both places.
Okay.
Well, it's called Toodledo. How do you spell it? Toodledo. And it's a little kludgy to synchronize with Outlook because, again, you have to get an account on their server, but it is free. But you can get a free account on their server. And then Toodledo on the iPhone will synchronize with their server, and they have a free program for Windows, at least, maybe for Mac that will synchronize between Alpha tasks and ToodleDoo server. Hmm. So it sounds like a kludgy, but it does work. You just open ToodleDoo on the iPhone, it'll synchronize from the server and bring up the latest set of things.
That's sort of like the Spotwatch, where you actually have the plug-in in Outlook, and you go and create tasks,
exactly.
And then they
that
get
still
feeds
works.
To watch. Does
that's
it really?
Still, yeah, I did actually do that, and that still works for me, yeah. But, cool. Yeah.
Yeah, so definitely task management is a very cool feature, but things need some more, things needs better reporting if it doesn't have it already and I just don't know how to access it.
Right.
And email. Emailing your synchronization with Outlook or something.
Yeah.
Or how about Lotus Notes?
There are. I've seen things, because I look at every app every day for at least 1 second, you know. Okay. And I swear I've seen ones that synchronize with Lotus Notes, I think.
Weird.
I know. Well, so I had all the fart apps plus that one. I guess that's enough for iPhone apps for now.
So we're over again. So
what's the name of the restaurant?
Oh,
did we ever figure it out? Okay. Just go to Slurpcast.
We'll be on the Slurpcast website. We're too lazy to actually ask or get up and
work. I know. We'll see it outside.
Everything's in Japanese, so we can't read. I can't read Japanese.
Yeah. Just the expensive Japanese one. We've been here before. It's just that one, yeah.
So is our website usability friendly?
I don't know. Never.
Is it 508 compliant?
I have no idea. It's really Blogger, so I don't know.
Right.
It's just Blogger. We don't.
So probably is.
We don't post pictures that often or anything, so it's probably okay.
But when we post pictures, are we using the alt tags?
Doesn't Blogger just do that? I forget.
I don't think so. You're supposed to describe what it is in the picture.
We might have.
People with screen readers can actually.
Why doesn't the screen reader just look at it and figure it out itself? Why is it off for? Why should we have to do everything? Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you guys for listening to the show. As always, www.slurpcast. In Mark's case, it's munchcast.
Right.
No. www.slurpcast.com. Or just throw out the WWs and just do slurpcast.com. It'll be the same thing.
Exactly.
Go to the blog.
Right.
Click to listen to the show.
Mm-hmm.
If you're on my Facebook, you'll have a play button. You can actually just play the show from the Facebook.
Okay.
And participate in the comments.
Yeah. Okay.
And subscribe. Put this in your iTunes if you're not already doing it.
Exactly.
Or write it down, slurpcast.com, on a yellow sticky note and place it on your neighbor's computer monitor.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
That would work.
That would work well. That'll help spread the news.
Mm-hmm.